Thank you all for coming. We do have a quorum. And first order of business is approval of the minutes. Everyone should have received your meeting packet. I assume you all did your homework and reviewed it. And is there a motion to approve, Harold?
With one correction, I did excuse myself from that meeting. I wasn't listed as being excused.
Sorry.
I had called up and said I wasn't going to be able to be here.
Okay.
Second.
Motion seconded by Rich and Brian to approve the minutes with one slight correction that Harold was excused from the last meeting. Any discussion, questions, issues, anything else? If not, all in favor say aye of approving the minutes as amended.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. My report as chair will be very brief. It has been a very busy year. I'll leave the details to the president. But as most of you know, last weekend we celebrated the 200th anniversary of the first day of classes at then Potsdam Academy. Brian was not here, contrary to popular opinion.
I was late for class.
He was late that day. Unfortunately, I had to miss it because we had a wedding. I'm not sure if any of you went to the ACT meeting, Association of College Council meetings. I was out of town and unavailable. You weren't there?
I was here celebrating 200 years.
Of course. And much more relevant to what we're doing today. Other than that, I think I mentioned briefly, I just came in from a meeting in Lake Placid, so if you are planning to view the leaves at their absolute peak, I highly recommend that you go now. We actually had a chance late yesterday to go to the top of Whiteface.
Nice.
And it was a little bit later when we got there, so some of the fog was in the valley, so to speak, but it was just breathtaking and so many people. And I think with one other exception, we were about the only car from New York State that we saw in that parking lot.
There is a festival there tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock at the Skeen.
Oh.
And I have volunteered to represent the city of Potsdam.
It's a tough job, but somebody had to do it,
yep.
Right?
Absolutely.
And Lake Placid is packed with people.
With beer.
Oh, it's the brew.
Flaming
Leaves Brew Festival or something. Yeah. Well, I think Brian would volunteer to assist if that position were open. So it was actually Yesterday was Thursday. Yesterday was the Governor's Sustainability Conference in Lake Placid. There were over 300 people there. We had two really top-notch keynote speakers. The first one was a guy named Mike Richter, who some of you who follow hockey may remember as the former goalie from the New York Rangers. Won the Stanley Cup, he's in the Hall of Fame, and he's also a three-time Olympian, having won both a silver and a gold, but was there in his capacity as the owner and creator of Bright Core Energy, and he also started a program called Healthy Life Partners, I believe. He had an excellent speech. We had a number of students there from Northwood School, where Mr. Richter is an alum as well. And our afternoon keynote was Dr. Quentin Wheeler, who's the president of SUNY ESF, who's an entomologist. And I must exclaim that I was most impressed by his ability to tie his school and his area of work into the concept of sustainability. And the sustainability focus of the conference was not just on renewable energy and conservation and preservation, but it ran the whole gamut. And so it was mostly germane to local officials, how they worked in their communities. Mayor Butler was there from Watertown, talked about the reuse and the redevelopment of things like the Woolworth Building and the old Lincoln Building. We had William Jemison, who's the dean of the Coulter School of Engineering at Clarkson, was talking about the Potsdam microgrid. We had a number of really good things, so I know some of you got the notice and it was a little bit short, but that happens.
Jim, can I just throw in a plug for one of my faculty members in one of my departments, Greg Bowditch in the biology department, who is now running the sustainability program in our new greenhouse. It's a fledgling program, but it's becoming very popular. And he will be bringing a group of students to Cuba in January, along with a group of community health students, to mine their knowledge of sustainability with our students. So this is an area that we're developing rather quickly, and I think it's an important area.
Thank you, Steve. There also was a young lady, Kelly Carter. That's it. She's our sustainability coordinator.
Yes, she is.
Right. Shared.
Shared with Canton.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, she was there with two hats on.
Yes.
Yep. She also was with our group of faculty and staff that went to Cuba.
Right.
Along with Betty.
Okay. And that's it. So I will now turn it over to the president.
Excellent. I could probably take a whole meeting with what's going on campus, so I will try to be brief. I would like to make sure that everybody is welcoming Dr. Bernadette Tiapo, our Chief Diversity Officer. I'm going to, at the close of my remarks, ask her to give an update because I think Bernadette's work on our campus, her introduction on our campus, was really key to the smooth opening. We had a very smooth opening, and we began with a community check-in to see where students were. It was for many students, especially many of our students from the city, it was a long, hot, violent summer. And I think the work that Bernadette and many of our staff have done made sure that when students came to campus, they were able to express how they felt and get support. And what that, I think, has led to is a much smoother start of the school year than in previous. So I'm going to cede a little bit of my time to her shortly. I do want to talk a little bit about strategic planning because that is a major focus of this year. Both our all-campus strategic plan, our strategic plan for diversity, equity, inclusion, which is due on November 15th to SUNY, as well as our academic master plan. So these efforts are ongoing. We're working to bring in the voices of the entire campus. I think at our next meeting we'll have some drafts for you to look at. Pretty close to final draft for you to look at and to give your input in. But I'm really excited about this because as we finish our 200 years, now we're saying, okay, what are we going to do? What's next? What are we going to do next? And how do we establish key priorities so that over the next 5 years we have a very clear path and then we execute? I don't usually get a chance to brag about our athletics, but I'll tell you, the women's rugby team wanted to make sure that I gave a shout out. They are undefeated, having beaten both Clarkson and St. Lawrence. I watched the St. Lawrence. In fact, they had to lend St. Lawrence some players. Same. You know, it always gives me great pleasure when we can beat St. Lawrence at any athletic endeavor. Addle and women's rugby are two. But our other teams, our men's soccer team has had an incredibly strong start to the year. Our women's volleyball team has just done extraordinary. So I'm just delighted that finally I can brag about as much, I can brag about our athletic programs as I do about our arts and music programs. So I do please encourage you to come and cheer the students on. They play with a lot of heart and a lot of determination. And I'm really proud of them. I have the great opportunity to drive through the mountains to Albany and to head to New York City regularly through my work with SUNY. I am on this search committee for the chancellor who is stepping down at the end of this academic year. That search is going very well, and I'm very optimistic we'll have a very strong pool of candidates and an excellent chancellor. By the time our Chancellor, Nancy Zimfer, steps down. It's an incredibly high-powered committee, and I'm really thrilled to be representing the comprehensive sector and the North Country. So rest assured that whenever there's an opportunity to remind my downstate colleagues, or even my so-called upstate colleagues, that there is, that there's far, far more to New York than Westchester, Albany, and Brooklyn and the Bronx, I am really happy to represent us. Going on quickly, I can't even begin to express how exciting the last 2 weekends have been. 2 weekends ago, we had family weekend, and that coupled with our Pellicciotti Opera competition, which brought world-class librettists and composers to campus, working with our students, working with our families, working with our students and faculty members. The winner was recently announced, and that will go on next year to be a full-stage production in our gorgeous Performing Arts Center. That same weekend, some of our Crane students sang with Patti LuPone. I know that 20 years from now, these students are going to come back and say, when I was a student, I sang with Patti LuPone. It was an incredible performance. And just, it was lovely to have students, family, faculty members, just coming onto campus, celebrating all of the amazing programming that we have. This last weekend, we celebrated 200 years of classes, but equally important, we celebrated $33.5 million for the comprehensive campaign. It is too late to have any donations counted as part of that campaign, but rest assured we are still fundraising. So if anybody in this room would like to get in as seed for that next campaign, we are collecting. It was an amazing celebration, and several of our faculty just created this, working with Sherry Paradise, the campaign director, created this incredible video and celebration where students could present the impact, and faculty could present the impact of this campaign on them. I tell you, we had many members of the foundation board and many significant donors literally in tears. They were so moved by that presentation. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to find a way to allow you to see at least the video presentation, because it shows the extraordinary community that we have and the extraordinary commitment of our alumni and our supporters just to give back to the campus. That same weekend, we had the Athletic Hall of Fame. So while we had a lot of folks back for the celebration, we had many of our athletics alums back on campus, along with alumni hockey games, alumni hockey, lacrosse, soccer. I'm not even sure what else, Rick, but it was, again, very well attended and allowed us to induct 3 new alums into our Athletics Hall of Fame. We've got a bunch of new programs starting, and I want to point, this is the first time I saw the brochure, the early college opportunity. So if you know any high school juniors or seniors who you think are ready for a college experience, we're starting that next year. This is a huge, this is huge for us as a campus, and it's a trend across the country for students, high school students, who are ready to begin their college careers earlier. So I'm going to point this one out particularly. But again, as boosters of our campus, one of the things that you can do for us is to spread the word about our amazing academic programs. And this is just one of them that I'm really proud of. So with that, what I'd like to do is ask for Annette to share some of the work that she's been doing to ensure that when students come on campus, they experience a welcoming and inclusive environment, and some of the work that she's doing to ensure that our strategic plan for diversity, equity, and inclusion is incredibly successful and completed on time and sets us on a good path going forward. So,
good morning, and thank you for this opportunity. It's exactly 4 months since I started working here, and I'm really excited and looking forward to many wonderful things to happen. This very brief report is just to look at some preliminary activities since I started here on June 6th. And I just have like five areas that I've been focusing on. Key to me is building relationships, and that I've been meeting with different stakeholders to actually understand the framework and structures of diversity, equity, and inclusion on our campus. I've also been reviewing ongoing diversity and inclusion initiatives to see what has been working well, what hasn't been, and what are the opportunities that we have. And looking at restructuring diversity, equity, and inclusion structure and framework on our campus. And then the really big thing that we've been doing is working on the diversity, equity, and inclusion strategic plan. As the president said, it is due and on November 15th. We have a really short timeline, but we're very optimistic that we're going to get it done. And then campus and community engagement, as well as campus wide activities and programs and collaborations. So those are the areas that I've focused on the past 4 months. I think with respect to building relationships, I have met with almost every single administrative unit and program at this point in time. And I'm currently meeting with different academic departments, student leaders, and student groups. And so that's going to take me a while. I'm looking at student organizations, there are more than 100 of them. And my goal is to be able to try as much as possible to reach out to every one of them. Reviewing some of the ongoing diversity and inclusion activities, I've been working with DIA, our Diversity and Inclusion Action Coalition, to really look at the work that they've been doing, their role on campus in fostering diversity, equity, and inclusion, but most especially to make sure that that work is aligned with our diversity, equity, and inclusion strategic plan. And we spent two retreat sessions actually doing strategic planning for DIA so that they won't fit into our strategic plan. And that was very well received. I think every single member on that group, more than 40, attended those two sessions and then we really thrilled with the work that we've done. Same with another group called PUB, which is Preparing for Change, is a long acronym, and their work, which also reviewed their purpose, charges, goals, and objectives to align with the anticipated diversity, equity, and inclusion plan. Restructuring. Based on all the feedback and another retreat that I had with staff of the Center for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, we determined that in order to create greater visibility for diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives and activities on campus, as well as to continue to provide the needed support, it was better that we really define the work that we're doing and establish a division for diversity, equity, and inclusion. And that was approved by the President's Council, and the new division will be made up of the Affirmative Action and Title IX offices, the Center for Diversity, the Office of Native American Affairs, NCSTEP, and other supporting structures like DIA and PUB. So we're really excited, and we are actually working with our new VP for Communication to create a website. We met yesterday, and we are going to have that running by the end of next week with all the offices aligned with that. So strategic planning process, I work with the president. We send out an email with a call for volunteers to serve on the task force, as well as reach out to other departments and VPs to appoint people to serve on the task force. We wanted it to represent the entire campus. And so we currently have 24 members on the task force, faculty, staff, and students who've been working really hard to get the plan in place by November 15. They've reviewed several documents, including our campus climate survey results from 2014, focus group feedback from 2015, and other reports they bring back and other documents. And at this point, we are really pleased with the work that we've done so far. We've identified six goals and several objectives and strategies. This afternoon we will be meeting to really narrow that down. And we've also scheduled two campus forums to solicit feedback, one on the 12th and one on the 18th. Just to reiterate what the president talked about, the campus community check-in, we have follow-up sessions after that. So we've had one in September, we're having another one on October 19th, and we'll have one more in November. It was very well received, and the students really wanted us to continue doing those check-ins after moving forward. I think. Those are some of the things. I'll provide more details at the next meeting, but just wanted to share.
You can imagine she's done so much in four very short months, but we're very proud. We're very proud of the work that it is doing.
I was just asked what you were doing in your spare time. Does anyone have any questions for going to bed? Right. Thank you very much. Yes, and it's 10:30.
Perfect.
Perfect. So this must be Dr. Baxter.
It is.
Yeah. It is.
We're being FaceTimed.
Yeah. There he is.
Hi, Ryan. Hello. And so we lived. Can you say something more? I'm just adjusting the volume.
Yes, I can say anything you need.
So I'm so happy to speak to our Urban Initiative in New York City, and there's no better way to do that than through the eyes and the experiences of our students. So Ryan is one of our participants in the Urban Initiative, and he is going to talk to you a bit about what that was like, or and continues to be.
Where is he talking to us from?
He is talking to, I'll let him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ryan.
Okay, Ryan, take it away.
Hello, you guys, everyone can hear me okay?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, great. Hopefully I'm too big of a screen here, but. Yeah, so my name's Ryan Luka, and I just completed my degree with Ukraine and Potsdam this past fall as a student taught here in New York City this past fall semester. And I began working right away. So I was a music ed major. I did the special music ed concentration that we have at Crane, and also minored in Spanish. And so I student taught at two different places, one in the Upper West Side of Manhattan at a general education elementary school that also has a bilingual ed program. And I also student taught for the second half of my time at the Talent Unlimited Performing Arts High School, which is a magnet high school on the Upper East Side. So, for those of you not familiar, it's still a public school, but kids have to audition and be accepted academically to attend there. And they do things that are upper level high school, and introductory college level music work there. Mm-hmm. So while I was there, I did a lot of instrumental music and taught music theory, as well as help administer auditions for students entering the program. And I first got interested in coming to the city partially through hearing great things about the program through Marsha, but also for the last four or so years, I worked with a nonprofit summer camp that serves kids from inner city New York. And that's how I got most interested in coming here. I'm from Binghamton originally, so definitely not a city boy. Bringing me to where I am now teaching, I would oftentimes come in on weekends to help with the audition process with my sponsor teacher. And I happened to be in one day, and the director of music for New York City, music ed for New York City, happened to be there just visiting. And so I met, she's good close friends with my sponsor teacher, and she was like, oh, wow, it's your student teacher, you're from Crane, right? She's like, oh, they have such a great reputation. We're so happy to have Crane students. She's like, are you looking to stay in New York City? And I said, oh, I definitely am. And so she just said, well, send me your resume. And so I sent it to her the next day. And 2 days later, or maybe 3 days later, I got a call from the special projects office, and I went in for an interview at the school where I am now and got the job on the spot. Actually, they created a music program at the school I'm at now. So I actually got hired the week before I was done student teaching. I had to take a day off from student teaching to interview. Which was granted very graciously by my sponsor teacher. Just to give a little background of where I work and what I do now, I work at a school that is part of District 75 in New York City. And District 75 is not, it doesn't have a geographic designation, but D75 is all special education. So the schools come up with a number of different things. They're specialized for different things. The school I work for, P368K, called Star Academy, is in a part of northern Brooklyn called Bedford-Stuyvesant, or Bed-Stuy. Our school has four sites, and I work at two of them. 3 days a week, I'm at a middle school that is designed for, most of our population are students who are neurotypical, but have had emotional disturbances of some kind, trauma-induced emotional disturbances, in large part for their family life, for the community, many of our kids. Bed-Stuy has a number of nicknames, also known as Do or Die Bed-Stuy. It is pretty hood, for lack of a better term. So many of our kids come from pretty rough backgrounds. And so we work with kids with emotional disturbances that are affecting their brain. But the other part of the population in our school have autism and other developmental disabilities in self-contained classrooms. So part of my time is working with them. And the other 2 days a week, our school also provides educational services to the New York City Children's Center, which is a psychiatric hospital with outpatient psychiatric care. So 2 days a week, I'm at the a school serving kids who are there for a long-term period of time, maybe a year or two at a time, due to sometimes chemical imbalance, things like psychosis and other mental health problems, psychosis and bipolar, that kind of thing, but also trauma-induced psychiatric issues that they need treatment for, as well as a short-term program. Kids come in who may have had, they come for a short-term treatment called intensive day treatment, where they are recovering from perhaps some severe anxiety or perhaps a suicidal episode or something like that. So that's part of the population I work with. So I actually teach 17 different class groups throughout the week, and they all are very, very different. And so it was interesting, when I was being interviewed for the position, they asked me things like, oh, well, what kinds of things would you like to be doing with your music curriculum? And I said something along the lines of, you know, there are many options, but depending on what had been done prior, we can see where we can go with that. They said, oh, well, you'll actually be creating the music department. Okay, we don't have one. Which is a great opportunity, also a challenge. But so we do lots of different things. For example, I just finished a unit, or I'm finishing a unit as part of Hispanic Heritage Month. We are doing a unit on Latin music in the United States, focusing on the style that our students encounter most in our part of the city, or at least most of New York City, engaging with the culture. I do a lot of interdisciplinary things as well. But I don't have to necessarily talk about things I do in my curriculum unless anyone interested or has any other questions for what's going on with me.
Questions for Ryan?
Comments?
Could I ask a question? Do you feel that your crane education prepared you well for this incredible job that you're doing now?
It certainly did. I felt very prepared, not only, especially in student teaching. My student teaching experiences are very different from what I do now in many ways. I felt very prepared, not in elementary general music where I started last September, very prepared for that. And when I went to the arts high school, very prepared. I had a lot of responsibilities with ensemble leadership, conducting music theory, those kinds of things, and teaching some private thing. And throughout the semester, so we very much, the curriculum was very well designed to help get a great start with that, very well felt prepared. But I did the special music to get concentration, which I can't speak highly enough of, that Tracy Wanamaker has piloted. Very well prepared, and it gave a great foundation, just understanding things. Many different strategies for different types of special needs, particularly autism, is the the time I work with the most. A lot of really great strategies and activities that we adapt musical activities for kids with special needs. And actually, one of the technologies that I learned about in one of Professor Wanamaker's classes, I use quite a bit. I'm actually going to be presenting on professional development next week with an arts cohort. It's essentially an electronic music system that you can hook up to your computer, and it replaces the keyboard strokes of your computer and sends electrical transmissions. And so you can connect it to anything that conducts electricity. And so I use you can connect it to fruit and vegetables or water, anything that works. So for kids with autism, it's pretty cool. You can, for my students with autism who have sensory sensitivities, we can connect anything, any object that they feel comfortable handling, and we can make that their instrument that sends a signal to the computer. I use GarageBand, which is just free on Mac computers.
Cool.
And so we've done songwriting competitions, things like that. So that was, those things were all things I learned with Grady Wanamaker's special music ed courses, and it has proved very, very helpful. And I'm, of course, continuing to learn a lot of things, but it was an excellent foundation.
Thank you.
Yes.
I have a question. What are the age groups of the kids you work with?
So the majority of the kids I work with are middle school and high school age. So from around 11 and 12 until 16, 17, high school. I work in a middle school where the kids are middle school age, their grade level does not really mean a whole lot in terms of tracking where they're at academically. Because in our school we have a very low literacy rate with the students coming into our school. Many of our kids in 7th and 8th grade read on the first and 2nd grade level. And then, of course, we have kids who are their developmental age is much lower than their chronological age. But I also teach high school students at the psychiatric center, but predominantly the middle school age group. But I'm also in the short-term psychiatric care program that I work with. Occasionally we'll have students in 4th, 5th grade, or 3rd or 4th grade, who come in for short-term psychiatric care, but the majority are middle school and high school.
You said you had 17 groups a week. How big are those groups?
So in my particular school, we don't have any groups that are larger than 12 students. So we have 12 to 1 to 1 classrooms, 12 students, one paraprofessional teaching assistant, and one teacher. So I have 12 1-1 classes, 8 1-1, which is a little more intensive, and then my classes, which are comprised mostly of students with autism and other developmental issues, are 6 to 1-1. So that's a self-contained classroom. They stay with their primary teacher all day long, and then they just leave to go work with other, what we call clusters, such as phys ed and music and things like that. So most of my classes are quite small. Typically not larger than 12. 12 even seems big compared to most of my classes. But it usually feels like a big class. One of my most difficult classes is 5 students, so.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes.
Yes, questions? No. Very impressive. Yes.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear if that was
No, that wasn't a question. We were commenting on how wonderful your presentation was. And how impressed we are by what you're doing, and proud of you. All the way from Binghamton to the Big Apple.
I appreciate that very much, and I am looking back especially very appreciative of the education and the experience I had at Crane and SUNY Boston. Very much so. Professors like Marcia, huge influence. I was joking, I was speaking with Marcia yesterday, and she was joking that she forced me to go to the city, but I said she was actually just the enabler. She. I appreciate your feedback, and I'm happy to share anything that's going on that talking to can be helpful. And like I said, I'm very grateful for my experience I had in Austin.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
Nos vemos.
All right, nos vemos.
Okay.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Adios. I was just thinking, You sounded like a psych major there for a while.
With a special ed training.
And then I'm also thinking where he's
located. Is that man incredible?
Yeah, he's probably...
So articulate.
Oh, yes. You'd never guess he just graduated.
Student taught last year.
Yeah.
And I have a video created by another student that couldn't get coverage for her Skype. Your Skype conversation with us, and I'd like to share that. Do we have time?
Yes.
Okay, this is Genevieve Brisha.
My name is Genevieve Brigida, and I'm a pre-K through fifth grade general music teacher in the Bronx. I graduated from the Crane School of Music in December 2013 with a degree in music education and a concentration in saxophone and special education in music. And I just received my master's degree from the Crane School of Music in this past summer of 2016 in music education K-12. I was looking forward to diving into a new culture. I grew up in Syracuse, New York, a wonderful town, but mostly suburbia. And I was interested in working with students who come from a different life than I did. I student taught at PS 84 Steinway in Long Island City,
Queens. That's where I went to grammar school.
I also student taught at Frank Sinatra School of the Arts in Long Island City.
And it's right up the street from the Steinway Piano Factory, hence the name.
PS 84 was a pre-K through 8th grade school. I taught general music with just a wonderful, wonderful sponsor teacher who not only let me teach quickly, soon in my experience, but she also enforced that I watch and observe her and observe the students and really take everything in. And many of the techniques that I learned from her are used in my classroom today. I also student taught at Frank Sinatra School of the Arts. That's a 9-12 school with a focus on dance, theater, art, and music. And my sponsor teacher there put me on the podium the first day of student teaching, and I was very nervous. But that experience really got me ready. I was able to conduct ensembles. I was able to teach a music theory class. And I was able to give lessons, private lessons and group lessons throughout the day. If I had to summarize my student teaching experience in New York City, my first word that comes to mind is humbling. You go to school and practice and you study and you learn so much in 4 years, and when you graduate, you feel, I am a master now. I am an expert of what I do. And then you get into the classroom and you realize, I'm not quite an expert. There are so many more factors into teaching. Creating a curriculum that not only helps your students learn, but helps them grow as people in the world of music. My school is done, but I, as a teacher, still have so much more to learn. And my second word would be enlightening. I moved from suburban in Syracuse to rural in Potsdam, and then to urban in New York. And urban was the final environment that I had not yet experienced as a student or as a teacher. So I saw so many cultures in my students. I heard languages that I had never heard before. I learned to speak in those languages. I met with parents for the first time. I had bad days and good days, and it's so enlightening and so valuable to experience new things and adapt to the environment that you're in. And I would recommend this experience to others. Come experience what this life is like. And if you love it, then stay. The city needs good music teachers, and the way that funding is going and some schools are getting the programs cut, if we as music educators show that we want to be in the city and that we love our jobs and that we can change the way that children experience music and we can make it better, I think that more schools will want music teachers back. They'll want them to stay. This is my classroom. I teach 628 students each week. This is my third year here, so I'm really getting to know the kids. Piano classes. I teach guitar classes, and I teach recorder classes. I also join up with programs with Carnegie Hall and Lincoln Center, and learn about world music through those programs, and classical music through those programs as well. And now I'm diving into the world of hip-hop with my fifth grade students, and we're creating and meeting artists in the city, and getting advice from them on how to be creative individuals. It's incredibly important for all colleges to have an urban student teaching initiative, because we tend to have assumptions of what school is and what it should be. At any school that you're in, there's going to be something that you haven't experienced before, and there is going to be a challenge that you need to work with and adapt to. We live in New York State, that is one of the most diverse states in the country, just because we have rural, we have suburban, we have the best city in the world, all in one state. So I think it's important for us to branch out and experience all those different ways of life and where we as music educators can fit in and what we can do in that music education world. To close, I would like to show you some pictures of my students who work so hard every day and really love music so much. It's a big part of their lives. And I'll just show you some photos. I hope you enjoy them. Feel free to come visit me in the Bronx anytime. My door is always open. Thank you.
Like to have her for a teacher.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. I can't believe that's the grammar school that I went to in Queens.
Isn't that?
And if you'd like, I could sing Hail to PS 84.
Well,
my daughter thinks it's hysterical. She said, Mom, you're singing to a number. I'm like, yes, because they don't have names, they have numbers. Well, now they've added Steinway to it, because it is just up the street from the Steinway Piano Factory. Where we used to play Perry Mason on the steps of the Steinway Piano.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. As a child.
That's a great story.
It is.
I wanted to underline that this initiative has come at almost no cost to us. And it's been created from the ground up, building a very robust network of partnerships with about 15 schools, with the help of alums, Barbara Murray, DOE, Director of Music, and my own connections. I taught there for 15 years prior to coming to Crane. Yeah, Upper West Side of Manhattan, West 78.
Yeah. Nice.
And since we've placed our students in the city, we've been able to recruit students here. We have three students on campus from Grant Street Campus High School. One of them I wanted to bring today, she is a freshman mariachi, professional mariachi player. Her dad drives a cab, and she has a very oral skills class that she can't get out of. I heard her play a couple of years ago in a practice room. She was playing a mariachi tune, and I thought, I want to get her to Crane. Yeah. So she's here and loving it. So I want to deepen our relationships. The year before last, we brought the Grand Street Campus, Wyndon's Grand Street Campus High School Wind Ensemble, that's a mouthful, to campus, and three of those students were in that program and in that, and were there in attendance. And as we think about our needs for the future, I think our biggest need is to assist with providing housing for our students in the city. I don't want that to be an obstacle, and yet it is. And then I just want to ensure that our curricula continues to prepare them for an urban experience. I think that's about it. Do you have any questions?
Questions? Comments?
I just think this is an extraordinary, extraordinary effort, and I'm really grateful for all of your efforts leading it. We have such incredible students, and there are more all throughout campus.
And these are, yes.
It's because of the incredible faculty we have working closely with our students. So thank you.
And then for the first time, we'll be holding auditions on the Upper West Side of Manhattan at the Bloomingdale School of Music,
great.
My first gig in the city.
Yeah,
and yeah. I know that Ryan told me that there were a couple of students at Talent Unlimited that wanted to audition but felt the geographical distance too prohibitive. So we have to really pay attention to that, right? So this is a beginning. So thank you so much.
So what brought you to Pottsdale?
Oh, I saw, you know, I wasn't planning on teaching in Upper Ed, although my classroom was the lab setting for Teachers College, Columbia University. And I was getting my doctorate, and then I saw this ad for a gig at Crane and thought, oh, that so describes what I do. I'm going to apply. And here I am.
The rest is history.
And then I thought I'll go back to the city in a couple of years, but I loved the program. I loved the students, and I stayed.
Can I just throw in a quick other plug?
Sure.
Marsha and Peter McCoy and the Latin Ensemble will be going to Cuba in March to perform with Los Naranjos, a 90-year-old
song
band. And they'll be taking classes at the University of San Diego on the history of Cuban, Afro-Cuban music tradition. So this is very exciting.
Very nice. That's great. And I'll just put in a plug. My great niece, who graduated from here with her bachelor's in May, majored in theater. She went to St. Rose and she decided that wasn't for her, but she stuck the year out and then she transferred back here and said it was just great. Now she lives in Madrid, which is way smaller than Syracuse. A little bit bigger than where I live, but it's still very small and very rural. So she is now doing her internship, which didn't fit in before the baccalaureate, in the city. And she's working at a theater, I think it's on 52nd and I don't know what the cross street is, but she just put on Facebook page the other day, she says, I am now employed as well. And I'm like, really, where are you working? She got hired at Ellen's Stardust Diner.
Oh.
So those of you don't know, that's the place you go where people are waiting to be discovered. It's like the drugstore in Hollywood used to be. So she is just blossomed in the city. You know, I figured she was one of the people who would run screaming and like my daughter did when she went to the city. There's homeless people sleeping in St. Patrick's. But she likes to go to visit. But anyway, she found the right spot and she found the right curriculum and she's just blossoming. So congratulations on the work that you and your students are doing. It's just fabulous.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry, I have to leave. I have phone interviews at 11:15.
Oh, my, okay. Are we doing this?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you again, Dr. Baxter. Okay, I know that Brian has to leave. He's probably wanted in court or something. those of you that don't know, he's a lawyer, so it's okay if he's wanted in court. So with the council's permission, can we move the action item up and then move to the... Are you ready, Rick?
I am.
Okay.
We have one action item. Policy on the student rights and assembly
procedure. It's at the
bottom
of your agenda, and you have a copy in front of you.
I wanted to point out that the copy that you have, the stapled one, is different than the one in your binder because the electronic one that went out, it was truncated.
It was cut off.
I think on the second to last page. So what we did was we provided this morning with the full document so you can see it. But a little bit of background and history. SUNY is embarked upon a policy and procedure for all SUNY campuses in terms of adhering to student rights and assembly procedures. And so what we did was we sought guidance from our university council, Elise Buzio, at System Administration, and worked with her to put this document together for your review. This is in compliance with SUNY regulations, and of course is in full compliance with the United States and New York State constitutions. The big change, really, the change that would be most notable would be we've actually made it, in terms of registration and facility usage, easier for students or groups. If they're below 10, they don't need to register with us. They can come on. And if it's 10 or more, then we ask groups to register with us so that we can provide the facility and manage the guidelines as such. So the facility might be a microphone, it might be a podium, it might be a room reservation, something like that. That's really the primary change of this particular policy here.
So it's actually made it easier?
Yes,
for
make
access.
It easier and to help organize and provide some structure to the process. So if the group is smaller than 10, they can students and come to campus and or group can and have a, you know, if they want to have a conversation or perhaps a discussion somewhere, then they can do that. But they have to follow the rest of the guidelines in terms of if you look at the policies about, you know, not disrupting any of our normal operations and providing all the safety and security measures that we require for public maintenance of order. So that the less than 10 really is the change. And Elise Buzio, once again, this was vetted through the SUNY legal.
Right. But can I correct me if I'm wrong, but that was to clarify for the campus that if one or two students wanted to express their opinions in a way that they would not have to
go through.
And
Absolutely.
So it was really to clarify for small groups of students who wanted to exercise
to
their First Amendment rights that they
That's
didn't
right.
need to register. And I think that was the main clarity that we were seeking.
And 10 or more doesn't take their rights away at all.
Right.
It just means that when we organize, when we help them plan and organize, that we just need some time to be able to get a facility location and the proper equipment.
Right.
So. Thank you.
Do we have a motion so we can discuss it? Harold, is there a second? Brian? Okay, discussion? Questions?
You said this has been vetted through SUNY legal?
Yes.
What if the students, what if you had like 11 students but they don't really want to be involved with seeking your help for room or something like that? What if they just wanted to be by themselves? Do they still have to report to you? Or?
Well, what they would do is they would go to in the student union. We have Casey Nelson, the campus life office. They would just go there and make a room reservation. It's just simply a room reservation, or most groups would just want to have a podium, like in the student union, right in the gathering area, or a table, and so we would be able to provide that.
So this is primarily for on-campus?
On-campus, that's right.
Do I understand that there's a policy now in existence, and this is an amendment to that policy?
That's correct.
And the amendment has to do with 10 and under?
Yes.
Otherwise, everything is already in place?
Already in place. And we've had that in place, you know, time, place, and manner provisions for quite some time.
Other questions? Discussion? If not, the motion's been made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you,
Rick. Thank you for your flexibility with the agenda.
Yes,
thank
you.
So now we will move along to the reports. Lisa's not here.
Oh, she sent me a note this morning. She wasn't feeling well.
Oh,
she sent her regrets.
Reminder, get your flu shot. I'm getting mine today. Okay. Sean's not here either.
Sean and other members of the executive committee from the student government have gone to a conference, I think in D.C. maybe.
Oh, this weekend, okay.
And he also sent his regrets.
All righty. Now, I know that our provost is here. Betty?
Good morning. There is a report included in your packet that summarizes a couple of the recent activities, including a special honor that was named to one of our faculty members, Dr. Fadi. See, how do you pronounce his last name so I won't mess it up? Fadi Abdallah, right?
Yes.
Right, one of our professors. The award that he got was a national award, so something that definitely brings some prestige to our campus, but really emphasizes the tremendous work that he does with students and involving students in his research. So we're very pleased with that. Our Student Success Center is under new leadership. Sean Partridge is the interim director of that center, and they're really focusing on student retention initiatives, which is, of course, the important counterbalance to bringing more students to campus to increase enrollment, but we need to make sure that we have the programming to keep them here and make sure that they're successful. Sean is doing a phenomenal job in working with the staff there and his supervisor, Alan Hersker, to develop programming that really focuses on retention. So a new one that they're working on is a mentoring program for probationary students. So instead of just saying goodbye, you know, you're academically not supposed to be here, to really focus on helping them stay and be successful. So that's one of many things that they're in the process of working on right now. Also, one of the things that in academic affairs we're really focusing on is developing new partnerships. This helps our students, but also helps with our enrollment management strategy, and one that's summarized in here is one that has been developing through Arts and Sciences, specifically through the Anthropology Department, with our dean's support as well. And that's a new agreement with the Oksaskni Nation and with St. Lawrence Academy that provides students, that Native American students, with the opportunity to get an associate's degree and then complete a bachelor's degree, so that they can learn the craft and the skill of archaeology so that they can work within the First Peoples. Apparently there are very few, maybe one, individual in the Canadian region who is a Native American who can work on site when there's a building going on or excavation that needs to happen. So there's a huge need for First Peoples to be trained in this area. So we're very excited. Attended a great ceremony with the president, and it was just one of those really good feeling, wonderful partnerships that we're really excited with. So it'll be a couple of years before we'd actually get students enrolled here, but they are in the pipeline right now. So one example of the kinds of articulation agreements that we're working on.
And having, if I can just throw this in, having Native Americans work with archaeology programs is in and of itself extraordinary accomplishment. And so kudos to both St. Louis College and
right.
our anthropology department for working out details. This is an extraordinary agreement. It doesn't happen.
No.
It hasn't happened in the other places that I've known.
Right. This is truly a unique partnership, not just unique for us in the SUNY system, but nationally it's also unique. So it's something we're extremely proud of. So we will look forward to getting those students. It'll be a couple years, but we certainly are looking forward to that. Our dean has mentioned some of the initiatives that are developing in Cuba as part of our international work. Also wanted to mention that Blair and Cheryl, Blair Lenore and Cheryl Miller, math professors that were actually here at the council, I think the last meeting, and talked about their wonderful program that they have with math overseas. Because of that experience, were asked to attend the World Forum dinner in New York. And I believe you might also, correct?
No, I'm not.
Okay. And were able to meet the president of Mexico at that event. Yeah, so it was a really nice honor for them in recognition of the great work that they're doing. So that was really exciting. They have some fun pictures. And also an interesting relationship that we have emerging with Ukraine. Dr. Greg Gardner from Business Administration's name is misspelled, I apologize, it's Gardner, not Garner, had this past semester had taught a class with students in Ukraine, partnering with our students here in Potsdam, so they use technology, Skype, I think, and that gave the students in the Ukraine the experience to learn about international communication. So participated in a Skype ceremony where they got a certificate of participation in that program. Obviously things in Ukraine are pretty rough right now. The educational opportunities are very difficult, but this provided them with a great window into international business and opportunity to work in concert with our students here. So a great model for us as we're thinking about expanding our international presence. Use the technology that we have in order to do that. It was exciting to see. So we're hoping that that particular relationship will evolve as well, particularly when things politically and economically stabilize a bit in Ukraine.
So, is this the same Greg Gardner that was teaching at JCC?
Yes, yes. Absolutely.
Questions? Comments? Okay, thank you, Betty.
Thank you.
June, before you move on, I just realized that I had an email with a written report from Sean.
Oh, okay.
If you'd like me to read that, I'd be happy to.
Okay.
So this
knowing
is,
that he wasn't going to be here, Sean
he very,
emailed
yes.
his report to Carol, so
easy.
Carol will read it.
Be very diligent SGA
That's
president.
Good. Yes,
it's very good.
Yes, we're very happy to have him.
Sean says, I hope all of you had a relaxing summer. I cannot believe we are already past the 5-week mark for this semester. I apologize for not being able to attend the first College Council meeting, but the SGA e-board and myself are fortunate enough to this semester to travel to Washington, D.C. for the National Student Government Conference. So far this semester, there have only been a few concerns within the student body. One concern raised dealt with the school's billing system and the effectiveness of student accounts. President Esterberg and I spoke at length about making the billing process easier for students here at Potsdam, especially when it comes to holds placed on students' accounts. After speaking with both President Esterberg and members of the college's retention committee, I believe we are on the right path to making the billing process less frustrating for students and their families. Some concerns have been raised by students both in and out of Senate and Assembly in regards to diversity training for professors here at Potsdam. Student leaders have asked me numerous times why it is mandatory for them to take diversity training at the beginning of every semester, but professors can choose to go to diversity training. I have not been able to speak to any administrators about this issue yet, so if the students who have the concerns are simply misinformed, and professors do receive mandatory diversity training, then there should not be any issue once I can relay that information to the student body. If these students are correct in their concerns, then I hope there is some way that I can assure them something is being done about the matter. Overall, SGA has had a busy but positive start to this semester. My e-board and I are looking forward to serving the students to the best of our abilities, and I look forward to working with each of you on the College Council. Best, Sean Kolaski. Great.
Do you
want
to go on that?
About the concerns he's raised? I conveyed the concerns about billing to the appropriate vice president, and I know Gerhardt's working on that. We also developed a policy last year that we would not put a financial hold on a student who had less than $500 and that we would work with them. So the financial hold will only be placed if they have a larger number, because we know that we don't want to put barriers to students' registration. So if a student owes $100, we still want them to register for classes. So that's something that the retention committee has been working pretty diligently on, and Rick and Gerhardt and others have been really attending to. It is true that faculty do not have mandatory training, and I think that making sure that training around diversity, equity, and inclusion is very much on our strategic plan. And there's, I think there are challenges, quite frankly, to making it mandatory for faculty that we'll have to figure out how we tackle and how we approach, and what are the best ways to ensure that faculty are treating all students with dignity and respect. Thank you.
I would just like to add that the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Task Force and DIAC members are currently reviewing three training models, and the goal is to retain one of those models for the entire campus. So,
great.
Thank you.
Okay, Gerhardt.
I'll just a quick follow-up to the billing issue. That is something that we responded to immediately and tried to determine what the best course of action would be in the short term to accommodate students. We didn't want to lose students because of poor customer service or obstacles to actually being able to register and continue to be here on campus as a result of that. So we did address that. The billing system itself is being revamped. There are some technology issues associated with that, but we're working on that. And from a customer service standpoint, we know that that's part of what we do. Our students are our customers, and we want to make sure that they're being served appropriately and that they're satisfied with the level of help that they're getting and assistance they're getting. So we have had discussions with our student accounts area, and we're working with some of the folks in our marketing and PR area and trying to develop some other strategies along with Bernadette's help on how do we speak to, how do we approach, and how do we serve our student population in the best way. So we take those kind of criticisms very seriously. And certainly from an enrollment standpoint, we want to make sure we're doing whatever we can to make our students feel comfortable. So we are working on that right now. Continuing on the relationship side, we had a very good meeting 2 weeks ago with our system administration folks in Department of Budget. They came to our campus on our invitation to talk about the state of the campus and offer some ideas, and for us to get a chance to meet and speak to them on what we're doing, how we are, and actually get these folks out to see the campus. Some of them have never been on any campus, which is what I found out. So it was nice to get them out of their offices in Albany and get them here to Potsdam, have some really good, constructive, productive conversation around who we are, what we're doing, some of the challenges that we are encountering, and then to actually take them around the campus. I had the opportunity to show them some of the great things that we have and give them perspective on Potsdam. They saw the Performing Arts Center, but then I took them down to Newman, right down to the river, and they got this really nice view of all the different things we have, just the depth and breadth of what Potsdam brings to the table. And I think they were pretty wowed. Drove them back up to Messina to the airport, and they couldn't get over all the things that we have to offer. So I think that was important to bring some just some color around who we are. And I think when we talk to them now on the phone or we have conference calls around some of the hard stuff, they know who we are, they can put faces with the names, they know the campus now. And that's something that didn't exist before. So I think that's a step in the right direction for us. On the financial side, we closed, this is the first time in quite a long time that I'm aware of that we closed our numbers on time. We submitted our reports to SUNY System on time, and we're in a certification phase now of those numbers. So by the end of this month, beginning of next, SUNY will come back to us and let us know where those numbers finally rest and settle up all of our accounts. So we're doing much better in that regard than we ever have. We're chipping away at our five-year financial plan, which we discussed a few times, and we're making progress in that regard. We actually closed the year, we'll be closing the year better than planned, so that's good news. We continue to be in a deficit, we will be for a while, but we are making progress to get ourselves out of that situation. So again, I think baby steps, but we're making the steps in the right direction. We're not falling behind, we're actually moving forward in that regard. We have some unique opportunities in the next few months, next year. Some of our key staff is aging out or retiring, and so we're conducting a current search for David Britt's replacement, who is my budget director in the business office, and I think that presents some unique opportunity to actually just restructure that area and focus on getting someone who can drive our budget process institutionally. And in advance of that, both Dr. Esterberg, myself, and members of President's Council have been working on developing a process, bringing the right people to the table to talk about budget, discuss budget in a more needs-oriented fashion, and bring some rationale to the process, and then communicate that out to the campus. So the transparency aspect of what, you know, what are those folks in the business office doing? How are these decisions being made? Those have all been questions over the last year or two that I've gotten, that the president has gotten, and we're just working on those things as well. So I think we're doing the right things, we're moving in the right direction, and we're seeing the progress. So.
If I could jump in, I think our relationships with SUNY are the best they've ever been, thanks to the work of Gerhard working with our financial folks, thanks to Rick's work, thanks to Vicky's work. I think that we are finally in a position where SUNY feels very good about the direction that we're making and very willing to help us work to improve our situation. So I'm grateful to all the hard work of really the whole senior leadership team in creating that environment with SUNY.
Very, very good, and I might say long overdue. The more people we can get here to see who we are and understand where we are. Bye, Brian.
I will tell you, it doesn't hurt that the system CFO has a niece and a nephew who are both Potsdam grads.
So what a coincidence.
This is a good thing.
Yes. It is a good
thing.
Very
good thing.
And you mentioned perspective. You know, it's important to get that perspective. I have to tell you this joke that I just heard. It's all right, it's not X-rated or anything. There was this slug who was walking down the street. And as he was walking down the street, he was mugged by two turtles. So of course the police were called. A crime had been committed. So the officers arrive on the scene and they ask the slug, "Can you tell me what happened?" And the slug looks at them and says, "Gee, officer, I don't know, it happened so fast." Takes a minute, Harold. All right.
I prefer not to.
That's okay. That was actually a joke that was told by President Wheeler yesterday.
Yeah.
So it's a presidential joke. Okay. Thank you, Gerhard.
You're quite welcome. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
And
advancement.
Yes, President Esterberg gets to be
I am serving as Vicky's.
Yes.
I'm just going to point out a few things. One is those beautiful CDs you have in front of you provide just wonderful stories from some of our older alums, some of our recent alums. It's just a really lovely oral history project that Advancement has been working on. So we wanted you to have that as part of the celebration of our campaign closing. In my report, I talked a little bit about the celebration. I know I said 33 and a half million. I never get tired of saying 33 and a half million. There's incredible stuff, just incredibly good work going on in Advancement. So what I'll simply say is you've got the numbers in your report. The most important thing now is setting us up well for that next comprehensive campaign, because we will always, always be looking to advance the needs of the campus. And so it's just been an extraordinary campaign. It's been an extraordinary year. And we took a weekend to celebrate. Now we're back at it.
Great. Thank you.
Yes.
You're welcome. Rick, on enrollment management and student affairs.
Thank you.
What have you been doing in your spare time?
He became a grandpa.
A grandpa?
Yeah.
Boy or girl?
Little boy.
And you have a pink tie on?
Yeah.
Oh, it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. All right, I'll give you a pass. All right, okay. Had to be one or the other. Congratulations, grandpa.
Thank you. Thank you. I just wanted to kind of go back to the report that is in your packet and give you some of the highlights. As you can see, we were 71 students below our headcount goal. And the decrease really was in the undergrad area. We were increased in the graduate area, which is a nice trend line to see. For many years experienced declines in the graduate programs, largely because of the fluctuations in teacher ed enrollments. So the 26 increase in the graduate area is a really nice sign for us, and that really helped serve as a buffer into our budget for this year. So very pleased on that. I also wanted to point out that I put some tidbits of little facts in there about the entering class, just so you can see what the profile looks like. The profile, as you can see, is very similar to that of other years. And, you know, we had a pretty close mirror in terms of the demography in the New York City area that we experienced a year ago. And then almost the same percentage of the entering the entering class in terms of students of color being at 41%. And last year, I think I reported 42. So we were almost identical in terms of the ratio there, the comparison. The numbers from the North Country continue to drop percentage-wise if you look at the entire. We put it into a pie chart that 24% is and that's not because we don't recruit in the North Country, that's because of the demographics being much smaller now, graduating classes in the school districts here in Northern New York. So the biggest challenge that I think we faced, and this is not in the report, but just gives you some sense of what we're working with, is trying to help our students with affordability and working through our, the cost of education, helping them secure the finances that they need to persist through, not only persistence meaning once they're here and going to the next semester, but also helping them navigate through the financial aid system and providing the information that they need. But more importantly, the resources we had dealt with, I don't think this was in any great detail. This is something we can certainly add to other agendas for this group and other meetings. But in last spring, we had a work group, and we had our Todd College Foundation involved, where we did some analytics on the entering class of 50, and we found that it was about half of the entering class had low income ranges, but what it resulted in is that there's a measure that you get from a financial aid form. It's called the expected family contribution. This is the number that families expected to pay, and about half were in the $0 to $3,000 range. And our cost of attendance on average is about $22 per year. So you know, what that resulted in was a significant gap. When we netted out all the forms of aid, the average gap subtracted out resulted in about just shy of $1,700 per student on average. It's like $1,688, something like that. So what we did was we started working with the foundation to address those particular groups of students, because those are the students with the highest need, of course. And then we applied it to this fall, and you know, we still had some difficulty in various pockets of the recruiting process. So, but overall, when we look at how we did in comparison to other campuses, I think we came out in really pretty good shape. We led the SUNY campuses in our sector for application flow. And, you know, we were quite pleased with the work that we did there and our operations in terms of recruiting and open houses, all the things that we do campus-wide. It seemed to be going smoothly. I think we have, you know, we're going to have continued challenges on the, if you look at the funnel in terms of the timeline, when we get to the lower end of the funnel, you know, it's usually in the springtime when students are making decisions based on their scholarship or their financial aid offers, that sort of thing. You know, those are the areas that really that we're looking at improving.
Rick, I got a question on
sure.
some of these stats. Mm-hmm. If I'm following this, mm-hmm. your inquiries were up. Mm-hmm. Which resulted in more applications, mm-hmm. which resulted in more acceptances, but your deposits were down.
That's right.
Does that impact the actual enrollments? Mm-hmm. So even though we accepted 3,900, maybe we get 3,900 actually coming in, right?
That's right. Yeah, it works if you put these, if the funnel being wide at 17,000, then it gets narrower. That's when we talk about that. So we had the application flow was almost 10% higher. We typically run at about 68 to 70% acceptance rate. So once we get an application, you know, 68 to 70% will get an acceptance from us. And then, so then the deposit phase is when students who have multiple acceptances. And we'll get students that are down to seven or eight institutions. And so we're in the running.
You know, one of the things that's important now is that students can so easily apply to so many schools
right.
through the Common App
right.
and through the SUNY App. So when I was going to school, you might have done 2-3 applications most because you typed them all by hand, you mailed them in, they were separate for each school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now they just need to add another name to that Common App or another name to the SUNY App, and students are now applying to 10, 15, 20 schools, and guidance counselors are suggesting, you know, if you've only applied to 5 or 6, you probably ought to add more. So this means that for a Rick, it's really much harder to predict how much of that entering, you know, how many people that we've accepted are actually going to deposit here. And that's, I mean, it's just wacky if you talk with
yeah.
enrollment managers. It's just really hard for them to predict
mm-hmm.
in the last few years.
if those deposits, though, are based on financial need,
well,
I would assume that they would have the same financial need going to any other school as well.
Correct, correct. But a student might even deposit at two or three schools now, which they didn't historically.
Yeah, they'll multiple deposit.
So.
And some students will actually pay the deposit, commit, and then they'll back out
yep.
the summer months
yep.
because they might get a better offer somewhere else. And, you know, it's that kind of thing. Or on the scenario I was describing where you have a student that really is struggling
yep.
or their parents might be struggling with financial needs and issues, they may like to stay close to home, go to community college, mm-hmm. and then hopefully we would see that student as a transfer at some point coming back in after receiving an associate's degree.
I just see that as a challenge for you.
Yeah.
It is. You would deal with those economically.
It is.
You know, not privileged individuals that want to go to college but can't get the financial resources to do it. I don't know how you overcome that.
It is, and thank you for that. And it also, if I go back to what Gerhard was saying, we have a similar challenge once they're here too. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that once they're here and they have the package that they won't encounter difficulties along the way. And when they do, then we're also obligated to try to do whatever we can to help address that. Because things will change in a family situation, sometimes in the same year, you know, or quickly, and then, you know, we want to be able to react to that. So getting, as you say, getting them here is, you know, we have to be challenged with that. We also have to think about that once they're here too. So it's all the way through, and we want to recruit students that have, to be graduates from the
yeah,
institution.
Exactly. Exactly.
What's driving that huge increase in departures?
We have a really aggressive recruiting campaign.
That's very significant.
Yeah.
It is.
And we do a lot of direct mail advertising. We do a lot of social media mm-hmm. work. We advertise in a lot of guidebook publications, college fairs. We have a very active alumni network helping us with those things. So it's multi-pronged approach. Very pleased with that. And we're doing more. We have a marketing study that we're doing this year, which we do about every two or three years. And what it looks at is the study is really externally driven. We have usually a firm help us, but in this case, we have people who are affiliated with a college in the advancement area that have experience with this, and we're looking at all of our publications and social media and all of the all of the important things. If you look at what we saw here, those testimonials are so powerful.
Absolutely.
And those are the things we want to capture and bring out there in either print form or digital. I think at the end of the day, getting these students here on campus, they need to be here. If you look outside.
Just like the SUNY people, they need to come here.
Yeah. If we can get them to campus, then the likelihood they'll enroll is really quite high.
From a marketing standpoint, I'm just going to throw this one out.
Yeah.
If you've got 809 deposits,
mm-hmm.
and then if that's down, do you have any tool that you can send to some of these people that says, why did you choose not to come here? Where you can try to identify how many people went to another school, how many people can't do it financially.
We have two tools for that. There's really three. One is what we record, because we're on the phone constantly, the admissions staff is. That's really the first one, the most interactive one. But the other one is the follow-up survey. And then the third one is there's a clearinghouse, which most of the schools in the United States belong to, where you can actually take your, you know, you can run your file against to see. It doesn't identify, you know, who the student is in terms of breaching their privacy, but what it does do is tell you where you lost most of your, where your competition.
As long as there's a mechanism to identify where you stand.
Right.
So now you can deal with each one of those issues.
Yeah.
If it's a transfer situation, they're going to another school, mm-hmm. you can address that.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a financial situation, yeah. then you can address that.
Yeah.
So as long as you've got something to be able to identify those, I think yeah. that's great.
Yeah, the clearinghouse is really the big one, but the most of our competition is within our own student system.
Yeah.
It's Plattsburgh, Fredonia, Oswego. Those are really the primary competitors.
At what point are the deposits non-refundable?
They're non-refundable, really. If they pay it, May 1 is the deadline.
Okay.
After May 1, it's not refundable. That seems to be the magic date. But it's usually not a tiebreaker for the student. You know, $100, if they get a financial aid package that might be a couple thousand more or whatever, you know, then they're willing to forfeit the 100, and they'll just move forward with just paying a double deposit. So, and then some students who can't afford the deposit, we will waive that because we don't want that to be a barrier for them. Much in the same way that, you know, Kristen mentioned, we don't want barriers or holes for students
right.
that are, you know, that have a fine for a library book or something under 500 here. So we'll do whatever we can to be flexible.
I just heard something on the news, I think it was yesterday, the day before, about the federal financial aid. They changed the deadlines, they've speeded it up, and it's looking at, like, it's a look back now instead of
a... They changed the cycle on it.
Is that going to help us, hurt us, not make any difference?
I think we're going to be able to get the information quicker. And I think the advantage there is that the family doesn't have to wait to get their taxes done. For this year, next year's group, it will be the 2016 taxes. The advantage there is that they could go on the prior year's information. And I think in that regard, it provides a more flexible time frame. So
okay.
We have a lot of momentum. We have an open house a week from tomorrow, and we will have a full capacity here for that. And the campus will have lots of faculty and staff engaged in that open house. And you know, we just keep moving forward, so we're really eager to move forward with the next enrollment cycle, which is already here.
Right.
So.
Okay.
Any other questions on enrollment? In the student affairs area, I asked Eric Boucher and Ruth Policella to, you know, put together a brief update for you. Those are our two interim associate deans. They along with myself, we handle the supervision of that area. So you can see that we have a lot of work going on in that area. The first one is I just wanted to point out, we have a new conduct officer, Janelle Newman, who's been here about a little more than a month. And Janelle is working with us in the conduct system, and I would, if it's okay, I would like to ask her to join us and give us an update at the December meeting.
Definitely.
So that she can walk through all the things that she's doing in response to the changes in the Code of Student Conduct area, if that's okay. And there is a lot going on. We have an advisory group, and I'm part of that, working with her in that regard. You can see from the other report, you know, there's a lot going on, everything from the emerging leaders to residence life area. There's lots of programming. The athletic program, as Kristen mentioned, is off to a great start. And we hope for a strong finish this fall with our sports season. And the hockey teams are both on the ice right now. And basketball, they're not at the October 15th deadline yet for NCAA, so they're in what they call captain's practices, which is without the coaches. That's a federal NCAA guideline. So, but we've got the winter programs already moving. So, a lot of stuff happening.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That ends our formal agenda. Does anyone have any other questions or issues or suggestions for topics for the next meeting, which I will remind you now is December 2nd? And we may have to make a change in the February meeting.
Yeah, I've suggested the next week, the 24th.
Can you send an email and check? Absolutely. Is everybody, everybody's not here?
Which one was it?
It was the 17th.
17th. Okay. I'll have Carol send an email out so that everybody gets that. Okay, we're far enough in advance. Will you be south?
I hope so. I'm not a snowbird, so I don't have plans.
If it's still there.
Yeah, really. Really, this is
I'm 24 West Coaster. So.
Oh, okay.
24, yeah.
Yep. All right with everybody? Anything else to come up before we say goodbye until December?
December. God, this semester is flying. That's good.
Some psychologist or whatever was talking on a program I heard a while ago about how it is, it seems like the older you get, the faster it goes.
That's true.
And I never heard a good explanation until then. And he said it's like when you're young, you only have like this much life experience. So there's like all this whole vast expanse ahead of you. So it seems like it takes forever, you know, till you're 16 and you get your learning permit and stuff. When you get to be my age, you're looking at it from the other end, and it's like it went just like that. I've been married 52 years. How could that be? You know, I remember when you were over 30, I couldn't trust you. So, but that makes about as much sense as anything I've ever heard. So that's why the semester is going just like that in the blink of an eye. The next thing you know, Rick's grandson will be applying to
City Potsdam. I just have to say, it's been an incredible semester so far, and I'm grateful to your leadership as chair and to the work that you all do to support the college as you go out into the community. Yes. I'm very grateful because that's, you know, it's that word of mouth. That's what gets us students, that's what gets people coming to check us out. So thank you, and thank you.
Thank you. It takes a village.
It does. And a town.
And a town. And a county.
And a
state.
Region.
That's right.
All right. Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Oh.
I'll motion.
All right. Okay. We'll let the right. Snowbird motion because he's not here enough to make a lot of motions. All right. Seconded by Harold. Any opposition?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Looks like I'm going to call from the team.
Go ahead. Right. To go change my car, and then Delaney and I are going to get our flu shots.
Oh, great.
And I'm taking her out for lunch because they have no school today. It's professional development. Where are you going? Professional development.
Oh, is that right?
Upstairs, 8th floor.
Oh,
she's on break.
She's on break until 12:30.
See everybody later.
Lunch.
Bye, Harold. Thanks, dear heart.
This is a very polite.
Have a good weekend. You too, sweetie.